everyone. Welcome to our Group H preview. This is the Window Podcast, and this is your home for international football. We are very excited to welcome, well, several guests you'll hear throughout the course of this show. But with us, joining us right now, we have our Portugal specialist, which is Danny. Danny, welcome to the show.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And of course, here as ever with my awesome co-host, Brandon. Brandon, how's it going today?
I'm good, Joe. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going good. We're going to get some rain here in a little bit, it looks like. But it's a, you know, it's a very fallish day, so it's good. Indeed. Good day to talk about the World Cup.
Absolutely. Before we get into Group H, just want to, Danny, why don't you give a plug for yourself and your podcast? It's one that we're a huge fan of, and wanted to make sure also you got the chance to tell everyone about your podcast. And,
absolutely,
you know, from our perspective, it's really the place to go for anything Portugal football.
I appreciate that, guys. Yeah. So 2018, the Seleção podcast began. I don't know if you could tell by everything from everything behind me on the video here, but yes. huge soccer fan, huge Portugal fan, Benfica fan as well. But the podcast itself was started as an inspiration from Tom Kundert, who runs Portugol.net. I had seen and read all of his stuff for years and years, and I have a background in broadcasting. I worked in the industry for a few years, and I was like, you know what? I love the English-speaking version and the news that we're getting in the written word, but what about a podcast? And I started in 2018. The reception has been wonderful, and it's a definite passion project for sure. This Portuguese national team, the Seleção, is my number one when it comes to sports. So as they go, I sometimes go, and that can be problematic on days that it doesn't go our way. But yeah, we get interviews with folks who cover the team, fans of the team, and just enjoying opportunities to branch out and do stuff like this with you guys. So yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I apologize for the cold. I'm fighting something. I'm not normally this nasally, so I apologize.
No worries at all. I think you mentioned as the team goes, so do you. I think a lot of people would think you're going to have a really exciting tournament, and think that you'll be invested in it for a while, beyond just the group, but we'll see. We want to discuss the Portugal side, talk through the group, what we think might happen, and really give people an idea of what to expect in Qatar. Portugal is a team that I would think many believe is going to win the group. Uruguay, South Korea, and Ghana also in the group. But when you look at the Portugal squad and expectations have to be high for this team. What do you think, Danny, about the group and just preliminary thoughts heading into it about the opposition?
Well, you know, when the draw first happened, I don't know if you've ever met a Portuguese person, but the first thing we always think about is the negative. So when we actually saw the draw, we didn't see a huge European foe. We didn't see a huge South American foe per se. We were like, oh, this is not a group of death scenario, which we are so accustomed to seeing in either the Euros or the World Cup. When you take a step back, though, it's one of the more even groups, I think, of the entire competition. Uruguay, Ghana, and South Korea, all pretty decent squads. Portugal, I would say, as on paper, should win the group on paper. But if anybody who's been following this national team for the last year and a half, 2 years, there's a lot of angst, I would say, simply because what is being displayed on the field is not what should be produced, again, on paper. The manager is coming under fire and has come under fire for the last couple of years, Fernando Santos, not getting the best out of the group, not getting the best out of the situations that they find themselves in. You know, numerous games where they have the opportunity to win a group or to solidify their place in either a tournament or a qualifying, and at home, no less, three different occasions, they all were losses. Obviously, everything going on with Cristiano Ronaldo at Manchester United, that has a huge spotlight, and he is still very much the anchor of this national team. And you know, there's a lack of cohesion and a lack of I think a lack of trust. I think in what, and maybe this is more coming from the fans than what we see on the field. Mm-hmm. We just don't trust this national team at the moment. I could see this team winning the group. I could see this team finishing last. It's that combustible, I think, right now with this national team. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in these three matches for sure.
Yeah. And the most recent instance of that you mentioned was just in the Nations League, where Portugal needed a draw at home against Spain to qualify for the finals. And that didn't happen. They lost 1-0 and missed out yet again on the finals there. So I think the one thing from an outsider looking in is the competition, where they have fallen short, I think may not necessarily be at the level in Group H. And you did say, which I agree, that the group is tough. How do you think Portugal will do really against some non-UEFA opposition that you may not typically see against an African side, against an Asian side? Do you think that might be a little bit in their favor, that they've been so battle-tested against tough teams, even though the results may have not been there?
It's a great question, and I like the optics of where you're coming from there. It's a very interesting group for Portugal as well, because they all have history with these three teams. The most recent World Cup in 2018, Portugal bowed out in the round of 16 to Uruguay. I think Uruguay is, I think, a little bit of a stronger side now than they were 4 years ago. In terms of Ghana and South Korea, the tie to South Korea is twofold. They needed a result in 2002 when South Korea was hosting along with Japan. The red card to João Pinto, and they got another red card in the second half. The player escapes me who got it, but a missed opportunity there. And then with Ghana, they beat Ghana in 2014 and kept Ghana out of the round of 16 there. And I like the fact that while it's a friendly and they don't play a lot of African teams, they have a friendly against Nigeria about a week before the World Cup begins. So the opponents themselves, they're unique in each way that they possibly can be. I think it's a good term you use, Brandon. I think being battle tested in the UEFA qualifying, it helps, but it does make for an intriguing opposition in each case, because each of these teams brings a little bit something different that they don't see on a regular basis. So it's going to be very interesting to see how Fernando Santos decides to use his squad, whoever comes on that squad, and that's something that can be discussed later. But it'll be very interesting to see how this team reacts to the three different styles of play that they'll be seeing.
Well, let's go ahead and break into that now, because that was a question that I had for you. So the squad that was called up for the latest round of Nation League games, do you think that what we're going to see in Qatar is going to be very close to that squad, or do you think there will be a lot of changes?
You know, I just so happen to have the roster right in front of me, Joe, so it's a great question. In terms of the goalkeeping situation, I think they're set. I think I was a skeptic when Diogo Costa first got the call, when playing in front of Rui Patricio, playing in front of José Sá. But that kid is going to, and I think one of my numerous guests, or frequent guests, I should say, Eric Krakauer, who used to be on BN Sports and now is the play-by-play guy for the Charlotte FC and the MLS. I think he said it perfectly. Diogo Costa is going to make Port a lot of money. That kid, I believe, 3 or 4 straight penalty saves in Champions League football, helping Port get to the round of 16 once again. So I think Diogo Costa is a lock at number one and is likely going to be one of the better keepers in the world. Defensively is where I have the issue right now, because the center back position, which has been such an issue for this national team for years, not so much with the talent, but just the transition plan. You know, Pep is likely not to make this World Cup team based on injury. I would love to see him still go to Qatar in more of a, lack of a better term, a cheerleading role and just being a presence in that locker room. But he's been injured. And, you know, as you get older, these injuries become, tougher and tougher to get back from. So we haven't found that number two guy to go with, or that partner, I should say, not number two per se, but that partner to go with Ruben Dias. Ruben Dias is one of the best center backs in the world, and Portugal is very, very lucky to have him. Yes. The question is, who is going to be sitting next to him in that role?
Who would you put? Yeah. Who would you say that is going to be? Like, for you personally, who would you prefer?
Man. All right, you guys have tough questions right now.
Yeah,
right.
Put you on the spot. Sorry.
I would put Ricard Carvalho and bring him back in the time machine, and then we'd have, you know. But honestly, right now, all things being equal, Fernando Sanchez has used Danilo Pereira, who's playing at PSG right now. He is naturally a central defender or a defensive mid, and he's been using him on the national side for that. I would only say him solely based on there hasn't been any other partner that Ruben Dias has had with any kind of regularity on this national team. Mm-hmm. Ideally, all things being equal, and again, let me see my right hand here, my Benfica homerism is going to come out here. Antonio Silva, the 18-year-old playing at Benfica, who has been just gangbusters, and he's another guy who's going to make Benfica a lot of money. I would love to see what a young guy like him paired up with Ruben Dias would look like. He's got a lot of poise for someone who's 18 years old. He opened up the scoring on a header against Juventus in Champions League this week. He's got everything you're looking for in a center back. You also have young guys like Gonçalo Inácio at Sporting and David Carmo, who's having a bit of a tough time at Porto, but definitely is capable of making his move from Braga. You have Diogo Leite. You have a lot of options. I would be most comfortable if you're not going to go with Danilo with either Antonio Silva or a guy who doesn't get a lot of run but is playing very, very well at Lille. And I'm not going to say José Font because I think that dude's time has passed, but that dude's a machine. He's always in good shape. But Thiago Diallo, I think it might be his time if Danilo can't go, because I know Danilo is on a bit of a knock right now, and I just don't know how serious it's going to be. But that's what worries me the most is that center back position. Portugal have an abundance of riches on the left back and the right back side of things. A lot of folks are a lot of good players in the midfield, but a lot of players out of form up front. Ronaldo, João Félix. You don't have Rafa Silva. He retired. Be a good time to bring him back because he's in tremendous form. If you can get figure that out. Diogo Jota, he's out. You have Pedro Neto, he's out. Rafael Leão is in tremendous form right now with AC Milan. Would love to see him get an extended run. But I would say the center backs and up front are my two concerns in terms of form and in terms of chemistry, because it seems to be lacking on both fronts right now.
Yeah, and for our listeners, Danny was asking us if we could play a center back before we started this call. So you can understand his concerns there. And Danny, you brought up a good point that we were discussing with some of our other group previews, which I find kind of interesting. And you mentioned Pep and how you're not expecting him to necessarily contribute meaningfully in the game for Portugal. But with the expanded rosters this year, it does allow teams a little bit of flexibility to perhaps bring a player or two that they may not even necessarily expect to play, but be kind of that veteran presence in the locker room and really help contribute towards morale, experience, things along of those nature. So do you think that's something Portugal might do?
I think they shouldn't. Because I think there's, and I get what you're saying, Brandon, in a tournament this important, I don't think you could just give away a roster spot. And And I love Pep. Back in 2010, whatever the year was that Portugal had Germany in their group, and he headbutted a German player. Portugal ended up losing 4-0. They crashed out later on. So it may have been 2014, but yeah. I digress.
We're familiar with that group.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I had my doubts on whether Pep should even continue going on, because it just, he was in the middle of not only being a tremendous center back at Real Madrid, but also being a tremendous hothead. Mm-hmm. I think he's completely changed his game almost like from that moment, and has been an absolute constant in the lineup, and a guy who I would not even blink twice at having the captain's armband on his arm. Mm-hmm. If Ronaldo, for whatever reason, was either not in the lineup or just, even if to give it to him for one day, he's been that important for this national team. 2016 in the Euros, he was immense. And has, as a naturalized player, because born in Brazil, I sometimes think that he may have more passion for this national team than some of the natural born Portuguese players. And that says a lot. It says a lot about him, says a lot about what it means to him being part of this national team. But with that said, if it comes down to putting him on the roster or not putting him on the roster, with his health the way it is right now, I say you sit him down and be like, hey, we'd love for you to come to Qatar. We'd love for you to be part of things. We'd love for you to be in the locker room. We'd love for you to be on the practice field with us. But we just can't give you a jersey because it's too much of a risk to put him. Because to me, Brandon and Joe, if he's going to be on the roster, he has to play. I don't think he serves them any good coming on in like the 80th. That's just me personally. I think Pep is just too important to kind of try to wedge in instead of just trying to have him come from the start from the beginning. So I still want Pep in Qatar, just more in a supportive technical cheerleader kind of role, because I think he's only one of a handful of guys, I think, who can still make that impact for this national team without physically being on the field.
Can I ask you about, and I'm probably going to murder his name pronunciation, so I apologize in advance, but can I ask you about João Félix? He's a player that I've followed for quite some time, actually. I was rather excited when he came onto the scene for Atletico Madrid. But I just kind of get this sense that he hasn't really lived up to expectations. Do you feel the same or no?
Oh, Joe, it's every Portuguese fan. We're waiting for Félix to make that move from Benfica to Atletico Madrid into the sensation that it was when it happened.
Yeah.
And a lot of things come into play with him. One, I think Atletico is just the wrong fit for him. Mm-hmm. Diego Simeone is a great manager. I just don't think he's a great manager for João Félix, nor do I think João Félix is a good player for Diego Simeone. With that said, Félix scored 2 goals yesterday in 30 yes. minutes, and it was the most time that he's had on the field for Atletico in some time. But I think injuries have also plagued him since the move. I think he's a classic, just injury prone player, which he's still so young. He's in his early 20s still. So he still has a lot of football left in him. But for me, the skill is there and the skill is unquestioned. I mean, yeah. the kid, if everything falls right for him, the kid could be a superstar.
Sure.
But he has to be on the field and he has to have the opportunity to do so. I liked the idea of going to Atletico at the time because it wasn't a force fed going to Chelsea, going to Man U, going to Man City that a lot of the moves have been for these young stars. But I also think that, I think now the third season of his move to Atletico has kind of shown that it's probably best for a change of scenery for him. And we'll see what happens there, but sky's the limit for him if he ever gets the injury thing situated and perhaps finds a more suited club for his game.
Yeah, and I am assuming that he is a lock for this roster, more or less.
I would say he's a lock based on his agent.
Yeah.
but again, I think he's a lock. honestly, I'll tell you why he's a lock for sure. It's because Diog Jota, Pedro Neto, Rafa Silva, you know, injuries and retirements. They don't have a lot of proven, and I wouldn't even call him proven yet because he hasn't really proved it on the national side yet. But and it's crazy to think of him as a veteran, but he is a veteran call up to this national team. So I would say solely based on availability, he's making the squad. But based on talent alone, he should make the squad. But I don't think the talent and what has been shown on the field, I should say, would automatically get him on. But I think just the circumstance, he's going to be at Qatar for sure.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Ronaldo because
what about him, Brandon? Anything going on with him?
Never heard of him.
no drama whatsoever.
It's an interesting spot in his career. It's an interesting time. And I don't know what to expect. I don't know what to expect from him. What are your thoughts? Are you expecting big things from him at the World Cup, or do you think he might get outshined by some of the others on the squad?
Ooh, outshined by others on the squad. You know what, Brandon? It is an interesting time because I think this crossroads kind of snuck up on everybody a little bit. Although I think for the last year or so doing my podcast, maybe a little bit longer than that, we've kind of questioned sometimes why is he playing 90, especially when games are, you know, well in hand. I think the easy answer there before was, you know, he's chasing that international goal record. He now has it. Holland is probably going to have every opportunity to break it, but Norway also doesn't play in big tournaments, so he'll have less games to do it. But I think now the player that he is now, I think that it is very apparent that he obviously is not the player he was even 4 or 5 years ago, certainly not the player he was when he was at Real Madrid. But I still think when he's on the field, you have to make sure that you know where he is. And, you know, will folks outshine him, like players on this squad? They have every opportunity to. You know, Bernardo Silva is a great player, and I think he can break out at any time. His teammate at Manchester United, Bruno Fernandes, a little bit of a disappointment so far with the national team. We're trying to figure out what life is going to be like without Ronaldo, and some folks think that it's going to open up the attack, and I kind of fall in line with that. So for the most part, I'm not dismissing Ronaldo in any way because, we haven't reached the success that we have in the last decade or so without him. But I think it comes to a point where, you know, Fernando Santos has to look at the player and be like, yeah, I'll start you. But, you know, 60, 65th minute, 70th minute, if you're not doing anything for us, I have to pull you. Mm-hmm. I think he would be a terrible substitution. I think just look at what he's doing right now at Manchester United. Right. Not so much with what, you know, take away the antics, you know, with that Tottenham game a couple weeks ago when he leaves after not agreeing reportedly to go in. But you'll know that if, you know, let's say we have João Félix and Rafael Leão starting, and it's the third match of the group, and they need a result, and Ronaldo is sitting on the bench, I don't know if anybody will see any of the game that's going on, because I'm sure the cameras will be on Ronaldo the entire time. When's he coming in? And whether it's Fernando Santos, who I personally think shouldn't be the manager anymore, it has to come to a point where he's like, listen, I've got to pull, like, I firmly believe that Ronaldo pulls the strings on the national team and he tells Fernando Santos, I'm going to play 90 and you're going to have to deal with it. But he's going to, if if Nonsense was any kind of strong-willed manager, he'd be like, you know what, dude, I get it, but at the 20-minute mark left in the game, we're going to have somebody come in. Because it has to be for the betterment of the team, not the betterment of Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. And this is coming from a huge Ronaldo fan. I think he's one of the greats of all time. Yeah. Arguably, top two, top three. But everything comes to an end at some point, and sometimes it comes to an end not on your timeline or not the way you want it. And hopefully with the national team, he understands that more than he does on the club side. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see what happens in Qatar with Ronaldo and this national team.
I think, and certainly you are closer and have a lot more insight on the national team than we do. If it's the group stage and Portugal's ahead and he's not playing 90, I kind of feel like he might be okay with that. An understanding of, okay, we've got a lead, we'll get some rest. But if you get to the knockout stage and the match is tied, if it's the round of 16 or the quarterfinals, and you get to the 70th minute and it's 1-1 or 0-0 and he gets pulled, I think that could cause a lot of problems.
Oh, there'd be strife. Don't get me wrong. But, whether it's Ronaldo or anybody, any player, you got to get the substitution right.
Yeah.
So if the sub comes in and helps contribute to the result and Portugal goes through, Ronaldo's not going to like that he got subbed out, but he'll see that it worked. If it doesn't work, you could have, a situation where he's pissed off and upset that he didn't come off the or upset that he came off the pitch, and so much. I can see I've done so much for this national team, blah blah blah. I get that too, and I would probably be the same situation because I want my leaders to be pissed off when they come on and have that emotion of it first, and then kind of sit back and be like, all right, I get why it was done. It's interesting because. Going back to your earlier point, Brandon, you saw what happened when he was taken off the field in the final of the Euro.
Yep.
And, you can criticize Ronaldo all you want, but I saw a dude who was completely invested in his team.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is before the goal even went in. From Eder in the 109th minute. I don't know how I know that verbatim, but you could tell that he is passionate about this national team. And I think what drives him, one of the things that drives him is trying to bring national success to this squad. International success, I should say, to this squad. And it would, while I think he does it for selfish reasons, and I think we all do things for selfish reasons on top of trying to do things for the greater good, I do think that his objective has always been to get a World Cup for Portugal. And I think however it would happen, I think he'd be fine with it. So we'll see what happens in the next few weeks here.
Yeah.
So we do have, that's fantastic. Thank you, Danny. There are actually a couple other teams in this group, believe it or not, that we should probably talk about.
No, there isn't. No, I'm
kidding. and Danny, you're welcome to weigh in on them as well. Sure. But because Brandon and I are going to attempt to cover these teams, but obviously we're talking about Uruguay, Portugal, and then South Korea. And we talked to, Michael from, the Tavern of the Taeguk Warriors podcast. He's actually based in Chicago, but so we'll clip that on to the end of the show. That was a really good interview. But I kind of want to head over now actually to Ghana and just kind of talk about them a little bit. We've had some conversations about them in the past. They were a team, I think, that we were a little surprised that they made it through the playoff to even get here. And so I don't want to say that our expectations are low. This is one of our favorite groups. We are enamored with this group. There is, quite a lot of, people who, are, I think ready to just see what this group has to bring to everybody. So, yeah. So speaking of Ghana, I guess we'll start off with Brandon. Brandon, what are your thoughts, kind of with Ghana, and then I'll share some of mine.
I think in the lead up to the World Cup, I've been critical of Ghana, and I feel silly to stop now. I think they're a team that, it's interesting where they're headed. They're bringing a lot of new players into the squad. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that a few times, but Ghana's a team that I feel just does not have experience together. And I think that may serve them well long-term, bringing these new players into the squad, because I think Ghana's a squad that we talked about and said, look, they're lacking a bit of that star power that they've historically had. They're a team that they qualified absolutely, you know, they're in, so they deserve to be there. How they got there doesn't matter at this point. They're there. So I think long-term bringing that, that new talent into the squad is going to suit them well. I am very concerned about what we're going to see from them at the World Cup. And I think the potential is there. It just feels a little bit soon given how many new players they brought in really over the summer.
Yeah. So just kind of looking at their recent form, they've only won one game in the last six matches that they've played, and that was against Nicaragua. And no offense to our Nicaragua fans, but you know, that's probably a game that you would think that they should be winning anyways. But they, you know, they kind of took a beating against Brazil. And then they lost to Qatar actually in a friendly match. They tied with Chile, and then they lost to Japan. So, you know, kind of going into this, into the World Cup, right? There's, I mean, there's not much to say for their form. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, they're bringing in a lot of, you know, a lot of new faces. And how is that going to, you know, how is that going to equate out? You know, again, as you mentioned, these faces that they're bringing in, you know, they're good players. You know, someone like Tariq Lamptey, right? Like he's, you know, he's a quality defender. You know, but there is something to be said for, as Danny was mentioning earlier about Portugal, right? This squad unity and this fighting for the team, right? Yeah. And, you know, just where is Ghana with that right now?
Yeah.
It's hard to say, you know? And so my expectations for them, unfortunately, are not high. But that being said, it's the World Cup. You know, everybody's going to be fighting and, you know, really trying to, you know, get the points. So,
absolutely.
Are the wheels going to fall off? I don't know. But hopefully not, you know, and to make the group competitive, it would be, you know, it'd be really great to see, you know, some exciting games. I'm very interested to know, because obviously Inaki Williams is going to be in the squad. Why would he switch to play for Ghana and then not go to the World Cup? Right. That doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I'm very curious to see what he could do. You know, there's some other key players, I think, for them as well. You know, your Kamaldeen Sulemanas, you know, your Felix Afanasyans, you know, obviously Jordan Ayew is huge for them. You know, you could even say Andre Ayew, Mohamed Kudus, right? Like these are all quality players. So the quality is there. What concerns me is, are they going to be able to bring it together as a team? You know, we know that Portugal can do that. We know that Uruguay can do that. We know that South Korea can do that. Can Ghana do that too?
And I think it's interesting because in our preview show, so we previewed all 32 teams and who they were playing in the September window in a show we did a month or so ago. And Ghana was a team that Joe hated the opposition that they scheduled. And I was a little bit on the other side of that because Ghana played Brazil and Nicaragua. And Brazil was always going to be a really tough test for them. And Nicaragua, they were likely to defeat. And I liked that they scheduled the match against Nicaragua because I felt that it gave them a little bit of an opportunity to gel and come together. Now, I think they did that. You look at some of the, you mentioned Lamptey, like his welcome in the locker room, like it was exciting. They had a lot of parties, welcome, like everything was great. And I think it's going to serve them really well going forward. But you look at the other match and they really got pounded by Brazil. And at the World Cup, they're going to be playing more teams that are like Brazil than are like Nicaragua. And so that to me is something that I'm really concerned about. I think Ghana is definitely a team that is on the rise, but I don't think it's going to happen yet for them. Danny's also probably not going to like to hear this, but at We Global Football, at We Global on Twitter, we do projections, our first stat projections. So we actually give Portugal the highest chance of any team in the entire tournament to get out of the group at 87%. Now, all right. That might feel a little bit optimistic. On the flip side,
Brandon, I like those numbers. I got to be honest with you. I'll take it right now.
That's good. And then on the flip side, Ghana, we have as the lowest chance of any of the 32 teams to get out of the group just 3.7% to get out of the group. So the numbers from our perspective say Ghana's really up against it. And I think I would be very surprised to see them get out of the group. I think they could have a good showing. But I just think the level of competition they're going to see at the World Cup from the other three teams in Group H is ultimately going to be too much for them.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the thoughts going through my head right now, you know, we love African teams, you know, we love their sense of community and team spirit, but again, it's just, can they bring it together in time? I think, you know, it's kind of a race against the clock. So, but no doubt that, you know, the whole country of Ghana will be behind their boys and, you know, behind the Black Stars. And, so yeah, we'll have to see how it goes.
I think he's trying to type. He has a Ghana take.
Oh, he's got a Ghana take.
These fingers.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, is Danny typing that? Oh, yeah.
Sorry, man.
No, you're good. Yeah. Tell us your thoughts on Ghana. Yeah, let's do it.
Well, it's not so much a take on Ghana per se. It's just from a Portugal point of view, because Portugal opens up with Ghana on Thanksgiving Day on November the 24th, and I don't think it's any surprise that the first game that, or the only friendly that Portugal has scheduled is with a team from Africa. They have Nigeria, I believe, on November the 17th. So, I think again, as we talked about earlier in the episode, Portugal doesn't play well. One, nobody's playing friendlies almost anymore. So I think when it comes to trying to figure out maybe the team that you might know the least about, I think that had a lot to do with trying to figure out who the opponent would be in that lone friendly. And it also doesn't hurt that it's, you know, a similar style of play is going to be your first game in the tournament when they take on Ghana, when Portugal takes on Ghana. So. To take a page from Rick Pitino when he was the head coach of the Celtics, you know, Michael Essien isn't walking through that door. But to Brandon's point and you too, Joe, it's like, you know, this tournament may be a tournament too early for this squad. I'd love to see what they do in the African nations, African Cup of Nations. Yep. And because I think that they might be set for longevity, it might just be a tournament too soon for them.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. And you had prompted a thought, and now it's escaped me. So if it comes back, I will ask. I can't remember what the question was, but I don't know if David's coming back. So let's go ahead and we'll talk about Uruguay.
We can jump into Uruguay.
Yeah, let's do it. So this to me is the team that I think is challenging for second place in the group. I'll go ahead and spill the beans on my own group predictions here, but I think Portugal is going to come in first. But that second place, I think, is going to be a real fight between South Korea and Uruguay. And you know, I'll even say Ghana. You know, I think Ghana will have something to say with that. Anybody who's been listening to our show knows that, I'm a Uruguay fanboy a little bit. I do enjoy some good Uruguayan football, and they actually have recently named their preliminary squad of 55 players. That's obviously going to be trimmed down quite a bit. But Yeah, it's very interesting. You can tell what they're trying to do, right? They're trying to bring in a newer generation with this squad because there are, at least 10 or more players on that preliminary squad that don't have any caps at all with Uruguay. And so, you know, you can kind of tell, you know, they're trying to exit an older generation and bring in a newer generation. And that's really the story of Uruguay to me right now, anyways. You know, I think this is the last hurrah for your Cavani's, for your Suarez, you know, and then there's also a young and exciting generation that's kind of coming through behind them, right? You know, you've got Darwin Nunez, right? You've got your Facundo Pelistris, right? I would even go so far as to say Diego Rossi. You know, you've got, I mean, you guys helped me out with some of the other ones. Surely I'm missing several.
Just in the midfield, you have Valverde who's playing.
Valverde, of course.
At Real. Yes,
How could I forget that?
I'm a bit of a Tottenham homer, so I love watching Rodrigo Betancourt play in the middle. Yes. I think. And then when you're playing in Portugal, you have Coates playing in the middle for Sporting. So I mentioned in my Portugal preview, I think this team is maybe even better set than they were 4 years ago, even with the amount of youth that they have. And they do have a very weird kind of transition period because, yeah, guys like Cavani and Suarez are on the way out, but and even Godin as well. But they do have I do think they have some quality depth coming through the ranks and could maybe show itself here in this tournament.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Totally agree.
Our Uruguayan guest is back.
He's back. There we go. And he's unmuted. Perfect.
And we can hear him. Great.
There we go. Awesome. Love it. Yeah. So we just kind of started talking about Uruguay. And so give us kind of your thoughts on the team and what are you expecting from them during this World Cup? How are you looking?
Okay. Yes. Well, thanks for having me on, by the way. And, I think Uruguay at the moment it's positivity, which is the biggest thing we are feeling right now. Because after a kind of a sad end towards the Oscar Tabarez era for Uruguay, Diego Alonso has brought some new life into this team. And the players on paper, we already knew that Uruguay could be a threat to any opposition, but the way Uruguay played and set up in games was just so negative and pragmatic. At the moment, though, with Diego Alonso in charge, he's almost a year now in charge of Uruguay. Uruguay tried to have more initiative without possession and also with possession in possession. And that is something that obviously is way more suited to the players like Valverde, like Araujo, who hopefully will be there, and also like Suarez, who at the moment, 35 years of age, he cannot be chasing 40 yards to reach the opponent's area. He can't really. So, yes, positivity is the thing I would say. And Uruguay will go to the tournament, hoping that we can win the tournament, obviously. But we certainly will go there trying to top the group because Brazil otherwise would be the next opponent, which is not an easy one. So,
right. Yeah, so... We were just talking about the preliminary squad that has been named, right? And you've probably seen that. There's like a list of 55 players. I was kind of mentioning, you know, it feels very much like a transitional period, even though I think things have turned around for the team. There's a kind of an old guard that's maybe transitioning out and a younger generation now that's starting to come through, right? Can you kind of give us your thoughts on that a little bit? And if you maybe agree with that sentiment and, like, how do you feel like this team has gelled over the last couple of years, and are they ready to, you know, face this World Cup?
Yeah, I think it's a really good assessment of how the Uruguay squad is looking at the moment. Suarez, Cavani, Godin, even Cáceres, Muslera, who probably will not be on goal in the World Cup. But these are like the 5-6 players who, were so big for Uruguay throughout the years. And to be honest, at the moment, the responsibility is not that much on their shoulders anymore because Valverde, as he is doing for Real Madrid, has also been like the main player for Uruguay in this last 12 months. Betancourt, another one who is really a star of this Uruguay team. And we have Darwin, of course. So all these kind of these players who are reaching, well, not their prime years yet, but they are 22, 23, 24. They are asserting themselves in this team. And then next to that, you have the old guard. And their, how do you say, the way they are uniting or the way they are combining a team is looking good. But I have to say, we don't have like a Diego Forlan in his prime, in the peak of his game. Valverde is getting into this, but Suarez is past it. Valverde is just about to hit it. So that's the only thing I would say is not there. But overall, it's a team that's well balanced, which can go into a game in different ways. Try to set up to hit on the counterattack. Try to press high. Try to break down low blocks. Although this is probably one of our weaknesses. But yeah, a team that is very versatile and has many different options in attack, defense, and midfield. The squad depth is quite good for Uruguay, for a country. Obviously, we all know with such a low population, the quality in depth at the moment, so the quantity is really, really well, fantastic. Yeah.
I think there are a lot of similarities between Uruguay and Ghana that we are mentioning from a squad perspective in terms of some of the old players coming out, some of the new players coming in. But I feel that the quality of the talent in Uruguay is probably a lot better than we're seeing or expecting from Ghana. What are your expectations in terms of the group, and how good do you think that this team can be?
Well, to start with the group, I would think to start against South Korea is really a nice thing for Uruguay anyway, because not doing any injustice to South Korea, I think it's a team Uruguay should beat. That's the way it is. And when you start with 3 points, you are way more comfortable. Uruguay, for many times, started the tournament losing or drawing. And then the pressure was completely on, which for some reason Uruguay like even more. But it's not the nice way to start. So opening this game with a win, it gives some rest, you know. You still have to go out there and get the other points, but it gives some calm serenity in the squad, I would think. So from that point, I think Uruguay should be aiming to win the group. This will not be easy, but I think Uruguay and Ghana will love to reignite their not another big rivalry, but one game was enough to to get a whole continent or a whole world of football basically against Uruguay. So that will be a lovely game. But Uruguay should be going into this group to win it, because we all can realize, and I think Danny, you would agree with me, is that Portugal is not playing to its full potential, and Portugal is certainly a team that can be a real big threat in this tournament. But as it is right now, Uruguay should be aiming to go to first place ahead of them, and then for the rest of the tournament, I would love to say Uruguay can have a good chance to win it, but for me, it's really game to game basis, because it's so hard. You know, if you come up against Brazil, then I think even if you play a brilliant game and you are at the top of your game, it's going to be so difficult. So it's a game to game basis, looking at how the bracket kind of unfolds. You know, which teams you're going to face. And then you can see, or you can have a judgment of Uruguay or if another team is going to make it. But for now, just topping the group, that's the aim, I would think. So, yeah.
Yeah. You made a number of good points. I think one differentiator between Uruguay and South Korea and Ghana, in talking about those other two teams, I think it's more thinking about how do we get out of the group. But to your point, you're saying, look, we think we can even top the group. We think that is feasible, and think that Portugal is potentially a team that we could upset, or even not upset, but just deservedly defeat. I'm really interested in that first match against South Korea, because I agree with you. I think if Uruguay comes out and wins, I think the group's almost over. Like it's going to be Portugal, it's going to be Uruguay, and then you see where they go. But if they don't win and either South Korea gets a draw, or if they do win, I think it's going to put a lot of pressure on Uruguay. And that's something that I definitely worry about. We've seen that in CONMEBOL qualifying, when their backs were against the wall, they responded well. for a while, they were on the outside looking in, and it didn't even look like they were going to qualify for the World Cup. But their backs were against the wall, and they did get the results. Now, the one thing that is a bit of a difference in when they came back is the opposition that they played. And we've talked about this a few times, Joe and myself. The four teams that they defeated to ultimately qualify, none of them are World Cup teams. And if you look back at what Uruguay has done against Argentina and Brazil, their record has not been good at all. It's been a very long time since they've gotten a win against either of those teams. Are you concerned about the level of competition and what we've seen? Obviously, Uruguay just lost to Iran. It was a friendly, of course, but are you concerned that we haven't really seen the results against better teams that they may see at the World Cup?
Yeah, it's a really good point. That's also a thing which is one of the reasons why Tabárez has been sacked is the games against Argentina and Brazil, especially, have been horrific in these last 2 decades, basically. For Brazil, I think it's been 2 decades. That's a real a big thing about Uruguay and how they are going to do in these big games in the World Cup. But one thing that we all know, I think, about Uruguay is when the going gets tough, it's like this mentality that most Uruguay teams have had in history comes to the surface, and they grind out results, as was the case in the 2014 World Cup against England and Italy, which were, well, absolutely amazing games, obviously, in terms of a neutral spectator. If you were involved in these teams or as a supporter, it's nerve-wracking because it's not easy on the eye. It's not a game which is really nice to watch, but it's Uruguay at their best, not playing well, but getting results. And I think when the qualifiers are on, certainly when you have a game against Argentina or Brazil, you know you have 18 games. And that is also the way these games are sometimes approached. Obviously, Uruguay want to get the result, and like every team in South America, but it's different when you're playing a knockout game or a final group game. Uruguay mostly show a different face. So I'm quite confident that Uruguay will do well against good opposition, as has been the case in recent World Cups. But the difference from the previous, well, like I said, 10 years of Uruguay playing in big games is that the approach is going to be different. Uruguay obviously realized that the weaknesses, the deficiencies the team has, but also are real more confident to play their game. And under Tabárez, this was never the case. Uruguay were always passive, pragmatic, while the players or the quality on the field or even on the bench suggested that we probably could have had another approach. And this is what we are going to see now, hopefully. Hopefully, obviously.
Great. So sorry, Brandon. So I have one more question for you, and then we'll kind of wrap things up with some predictions. I mentioned this earlier, but I'm a huge fan of Facundo Pellistri, and so I just wanted to know, you know, if you felt like he could be an X factor for this team at the World Cup, because I do think he'll be in the squad, and I guess I'll also throw this out there, you know, do you think he needs to move on from Manchester United?
Yes, to obviously. It's a shame because he would have gone out on loan if it wasn't for him getting injured again, which kind of ruled out the teams which wanted to loan him because they don't want a player that's first 2 months injured. Yeah. But yeah, he will be on the squad. That's the way it's going to be, because Pellistri, who is an exciting player, is like kind of the symbol of the new Alonso era. Pellistri was his first big decision of calling him up while he was not even playing for Alaves. And he did so well in these games, in these last few qualifiers. So he will be there. And I think he deserves it. But it's obviously kind of weird because he has not played a minute of football, first team football anyway, this season. So it's quite weird, yeah. But I think... maybe it will matter, but I don't think it particularly, I don't think it necessarily has to matter, or it has to have an influence, because we know he will arrive really fit. That's the way it's going to be. Okay, you can argue he has no match rhythm, but Yeah, I mean, it's an easy thing to say when he's not playing well, but you never know how it's going to turn out. So I think he's going to be a player like De La Cruz, like Darascheta, who can be like surprise packages for Uruguay, because Balistri is obviously a bit younger and a less has more years left in his career, but also has achieved less than the two others I mentioned. But these are probably not for you, but for the wider audience, are a bit unknown. And it's nice, it will be nice to see them kind of have a important role for Uruguay, or important, be an important player for Uruguay. So, yes, hopefully Balistri can be this secret weapon, and it will be nice for him as well, so he can finally leave Manchester United, which he needs to do. Absolutely, yeah. And it's not this is not a criticism on United, but he just needs to, you know, he needs to play. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Cool. Well, I think what we'll do next to kind of wrap this up a little bit is we're going to go around to everybody and just, I'm going to press you first for your group predictions. You can give us the top two or all four, whatever you're comfortable with. And then also would like to hear who you think is going to win the World Cup overall. So we'll start with Danny, actually.
All right. Here's a prediction for just a general prediction. I think whether it is Portugal or Uruguay who wins the group, I think whoever wins this group will go to the semifinals. I think being on this side of the bracket as a first place team bodes well for advancing in this tournament. The other side, you have, as David mentioned, you finish in second, you're likely getting Brazil in the round of 16. If you somehow got through there, you're likely seeing Spain in the quarters, and then you're likely seeing Argentina in the semis. So I'm not a big Belgium guy at all. Mm-hmm. I think they're very much a team that can be had, and I know that Portugal lost to them in the Euros in the round of 16 in the Euros last time, but I just don't believe in them, and I think either Portugal or Uruguay can get there through them. But in terms of a prediction, I want to say Portugal is going to win the group, and I'm going to say that they will. I think that match, that second group match against Uruguay, is going to be absolute fire, especially if we're both coming in on 3 points, because needing to avoid that other side of the bracket is paramount for the success of either national team going forward in this tournament. So if Portugal can beat Ghana and if Uruguay can beat South Korea, what a game we're going to be seeing, I think, in that second group match, because I think it'll be all to play for in the success of this tournament. So I think Portugal finishes one and Uruguay finishes two.
I think that's a great point that we just talked about actually 10 minutes ago, is that Uruguay's record against Brazil has been very, very poor. And if they do not win the group, it is very likely that they end up facing Brazil in the quarterfinals if they get there. And that is, I'm sorry, in the round of 16, not even the quarterfinals. And that is not somewhere that they want to be. So I agree. I think that Portugal-Uruguay match is going to be a great one, as you mentioned, particularly if they both are on 3 points. All right. I'll give my predictions, and then we'll keep going. I agree. I actually think Portugal will win the group, and I think Uruguay will come second. I do think that South Korea has definitely got a fighting chance to get through. But as I mentioned previously, I am not huge on Ghana. I think that, honestly, if they get any points out of this group, I think it might be a bit of a surprise for me. I think against South Korea, they certainly can give them a good game, but I don't expect much from them in the other two matches. That being said, Ghana is always tough at the World Cup. That's just something we've come to expect from them. But it feels a little soon for them. So I'm going to go with the chalky pick of Portugal first, Uruguay second, South Korea third, and Ghana fourth.
All right. I will flip the script. I'm going to go with Uruguay in first, Portugal in second, strictly because I would like to see a Portugal-Brazil game, and I think that'd be a great game.
I don't want to see a Portugal-Brazil game, unless it's in the final.
I knew he was going to say that. Then I think South Korea comes in third and Ghana in last place. We've mentioned this in other shows, but I'll throw it out there. I do think Brazil actually will go on to win the whole thing. So, David, let's hear from you.
Yes. So I also think Brazil will go on to win the World Cup. I do believe this. And for the group, I will go with Uruguay. I don't think it's an easy one. I'm not sure, to be honest, who's going to finish first, but I will say Uruguay will finish first, Portugal second, and then I think South Korea third, Ghana fourth. You never know, you know, this can be like a Costa Rica scenario and some team will come up and top the group like they did in 2014. So, yeah. I mean, I hope to see a surprise like this in this tournament, but not in this group.
So I want to ask then, if that is the case where Uruguay wins the group, they've already taken out a very strong team in Portugal, they're avoiding Brazil, how deep do you think they can go into the tournament?
I think if you top the group and for example, beat Portugal in a good way, in a way that impresses, I think Uruguay have a chance to go all the way. And that's obviously has many factors which are important for this case. Not another big player to go out injured like Uruguay have had for so many times in history in tournaments. If all things go their way, basically, Uruguay have a good chance as a team like Denmark, who I would believe to be in the same category in terms of the chances they have to win the World Cup. They can go on to be like the surprise package, like a Croatia in 2018. So, yeah, I do believe this. But I think it's so hard to predict. It's really hard to predict in these kind of tournaments. But one thing I would say is that Uruguay, if you hear the players talk, Uruguay do approach this tournament as a tournament that they want to win and that they believe they can win. And that's also a thing with Uruguay. This is obviously not a big nation, always an underdog, but Uruguay have quite the history, as we all know. I would say quarterfinals would be the highest. If we go out before the quarterfinals, it will be like a deception. And further than that, you never know. So, yeah, that's how I would say it, yeah.
Well, David, thank you for joining us. You didn't get a chance earlier, so can you tell everybody where they can find your work?
Yeah, so thank you for having me on. It's been nice to chat to you guys. So you can find me at the Uruguayan Heroes on Twitter. In English, trying to update all things Uruguay and the players associated with it, yeah.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, yeah, we can't thank the both of you enough, Danny and David, for joining us. And then also Michael for taking time out of his day to talk South Korea, which you guys will hear in just a moment. But thank you guys for spending your Sunday afternoon with us and talking and helping us break down Group H. We really appreciate it.
Yes.
Yeah, likewise, guys. It's going to be fun having a World Cup in the winter. That's going to be wild.
Yes,
it is. And again, thank you to all of our listeners as well. We're at Window INTL Pod on Twitter. You can find myself at @we_global. We Global Football, all kinds of statistics about international football exclusively. You can find Joe at 12th Yank on Twitter as well. We really appreciate you joining us and listening to our Group H preview.
Cheers.
We are joined now by Michael Welch. Michael, welcome. How are you?
Nice to meet you guys. Thanks for having me on. Yeah.
Michael is our resident South Korea expert. He's going to talk to us a little bit about the squad in Qatar, what he expects out of the group. I'm sure he's expecting big things. Michael, before we get into that, why don't you introduce yourself, give you a little bit of your socials and where people can find you, just so we can all thank you for joining us on the show.
Yeah, so my name is Michael Welch. I am a part of this group called Taeguk Tavern. It's essentially basically like the brainchild of this guy, Roy Kim. And essentially what he wanted to do was basically provide a place where Korean Americans, Koreans in Canada, Koreans around the world that may not have, you know, the best Korean language ability, give them the ability to feel connected to their national team. The thing is, like, you know, obviously the Korean media is going to report on the Korean national team in Korean, but that shouldn't mean that if you've moved to Korea, away from Korea, if you've moved to the United States or wherever, that you don't feel like you can follow them in depth like you want to, right? You want to be able to know the players, know where they're playing, know how they're doing, and you want to be able to feel like you can connect to that national team. So basically, he did that by just creating a community and bringing together a lot of the Korean diaspora around this national team in the language, you know, of English that we know best. And also, I think he also helped a lot of people learn a bit more Korean as well. So that's kind of the lifeline of where I'm from. You can find me on Twitter at Taeguk Tavern. We'll probably link it below. But basically, yeah, we're just a place where if you want to learn about the Korean national team and you don't necessarily know Korean, you got to come to us.
Yeah, so I've listened to a couple of their episodes and I can vouch. It's very informative. It's taken me a couple episodes to get used to all the names, and just because, you know, you guys use, you know, the formal accents or whatever, right? But no, it's very good. It's a very, very professional product. So I've been very, very impressed with it. So
oh my gosh, thank you so much for saying that. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
We're really excited to have you talk a little bit about Group H. For those listening, we're have a solo with Michael here, so looking forward to some big things and some optimism for the team and what to expect in Qatar. So in Group H, we've got Portugal, Uruguay, Ghana, and South Korea. And I wanted to ask, FIFA uses the formal Korea Republic. Typically, you hear a lot of people refer to the country as South Korea. Is there a preference? Are both equally acceptable? I want to make sure that we're referring to it in the correct terminology.
I mean, I think it's like FIFA uses Korea Republic because that's sort of the official name for the country. Mm-hmm. Basically, in Korean, Daehanminguk means Republic of Korea, which is essentially what, you know, South Korea calls itself, right? North Korea is considered the People's Republic of Korea, and they have a quite longer name in the Korean language. But overall, you know, South Korea, Republic of Korea, I think they're kind of, you know, or Korea Republic, I think they're all interchangeable. But I feel like the one that's the most mainstream is probably South Korea. That's probably the most mainstream one.
All right. Well, we'll go with that going forward. South Korea, as we said, Portugal, Uruguay, and Ghana in the group. This is an interesting group, and I think that we've talked about a number of these teams really in our World Cup qualifying preview shows. As teams started to qualify, there's a lot of different paths that these teams took. South Korea, I think, did not have that much trouble qualifying, I would say. I think in Asia, the group they were in qualifying, they really came out of the gate strong, and overall I think didn't really have that tough of a time qualifying. Ghana and Uruguay, on the other hand, Ghana, I think a lot of people, and we talked about them, may not have had the best qualifying performance, but ultimately made it. And Uruguay had to come from behind in CONMEBOL to really get there. So what are your thoughts in terms of just the path to get there? Do you think it gives South Korea some momentum just knowing that they really breezed through qualifying, or do you think perhaps it's not the best preparation for the tournament?
I think that probably it's, you know, it's more the latter. Like, it's hard to say that playing against all of the teams in the ginormous continent that is Asia is the best preparation, because there's just a varying level of play from these teams. In the early stages of World Cup qualifying, Korea will most likely play, you know, smaller teams like Sri Lanka or whatever that are very much parking the bus. very much allowing Korea to control the game and asking them to break us down. And sometimes that happens and Korea scores a lot of goals. And sometimes it's more of a struggle and they maybe grind out a 1-0 win. But that's sort of like having to play so many of your matches where you're on the front foot and you're controlling the game and the opponent is just sort of sitting back and just hoping not to concede. That's not really what you're going to see in the World Cup.
Right.
So it's not the best preparation. And I think that's why, you know, in the June friendly window and in the September friendly window, you know, the Korean Football Association really focused on recruiting nations that qualify for the World Cup outside of Asia, yeah. You know, South America, Africa, and CONCACAF, and really tried to say, like, we want to play World Cup opponents and test ourselves against them. Sometimes it didn't go that well. Other times it went better. So overall, Asian qualifying is like, it's something that we know Korea is going to have a pretty easy time with. They're going to be able to do. And then it's just a matter of in that year when the World Cup's going to happen, you have to do everything you can to prepare against the world's best.
Yeah. And I think you have to be feeling a little bit optimistic after seeing, especially in September, what the team did heading into Qatar. What do you think in terms of the group itself? Who do you think South Korea matches up best with? Who do you think in Portugal and Uruguay are likely many people's choice to finish top two? Who do you think they could take advantage of? Is there something in one of those teams that you think will give South Korea an edge and ultimately get out of the group?
I think the team that like I kind of look towards in terms of like Korea getting an edge against is Uruguay. I think that, you know, it's the first match for Korea, and I think we'll want to start on the front foot. And a lot of what I'm hearing about Uruguay's play recently, especially knowing that they struggled to break down Iran and lost to them late, is that, you know, they could be there for the taking. They might play a little bit defensively. They might try to hit on the counter. And it's possible that, you know, they even let us, you know, have a good amount of possession and give us a chance to sort of work our build-up play. So that's kind of the match I'm looking forward to right off the bat, just hoping to maybe get a 1-0 or 2-0 win to start off the World Cup, right? Because I think that's the other thing for Korea. I think like starting off World Cup with a loss just always dents our confidence a lot more than it needs to. So I want to start off with a win.
That is a huge match, especially playing Uruguay in the first match. Any result there is going to be a plus and really give a lot of confidence to the team.
Mm-hmm.
So, Michael, tell us a little bit about now the team as it, you know, as we kind of head into this, you know, is the squad mostly settled at this point? I imagine it probably is, given that we're so close. But who in your mind is maybe an outsider that could sneak in there? And I have a follow-up question, actually. So I happen to be a Hertha Berlin fan. And so I was curious to know if we might see Lee Dong-jun in the squad. I think I'm pretty sure he's coming back from an injury, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know if that's going to play a part. You may know a little bit more about that than I do. But give us your thoughts on that.
I'm going to answer the follow-up question first because it's a shorter answer.
Yeah.
I would probably say that Lee Dong-jun is probably not going to make the World Cup squad. I think for Paulo Bento, when he evaluates young players, he really tends to value young players that are getting a lot of playing time at their club. You know, Lee Dong-jun has really struggled with injuries since he's moved to Hertha Berlin. Mm-hmm. It's been a tough time for him. I think that most likely he's going to be left home and he's really just going to focus on just getting back into the plans at Hertha Berlin, getting healthy. We'll definitely probably see him for the 2023 Asian Cup. I think that's a better shout for him. Mm-hmm. In terms of like a player that could sort of like sneak in and sort of make an impact that not really anybody is expecting, it's hard to say because there's not really like this element of sneakiness in Paulo Bento's coaching style. He tends to really rock with the same guys, with the same lineups. You tend to see even like the same substitutes in most matches. So it's hard to say there's going to be a guy that's going to sneak in because most likely, you know, the players that not everybody knows about will still have been playing for him a lot. So if there's one guy that I'm like, okay, could this guy like sneak in and do something crazy? Probably Ulsan Hyundai's Eumwonsang. That guy just feels like he's most likely going to make the team. He's a winger that most likely will come on, you know, 70th minute, 80th minute. He's very, very fast. He's very, very shifty. If there's any guy that like Paolo Bento could rely on to run at a really tired defense, it's this guy. So that's like the one pick that I'm like, okay, I could see him playing some minutes and doing something really interesting.
Wanted to ask about, speaking of the squad, you look at this group, and I think compared to maybe any other group, you have Youngmin Son, Ronaldo. It's going to be two big names, I guess. what are your expectations for that match against Portugal, and then more for Son more broadly?
I'm not going to lie. That's the match that scares me the most. I feel like, you know, the thing that's really scary about Portugal's team is the fact that there's Bernardo Silva, there's Rafael Leao, there's Ronaldo. Yeah. You know, there's just a lot of players that can attack us and that are fast, shifty, creative. And I mean, I'm sure I'm not even mentioning so many other great, like Matheus Nunes, for example. Like, there's so many good Portuguese players, and I think that's one I'm really scared of. Especially down the flanks, I just feel like our fullbacks might have trouble. But a star matchup between Cristiano Ronaldo and Son Heung-min is just, you know, something that you dream of as a Korean national team fan. Like, you want to see our star being compared in that way, right? You want to see him being compared as like one of the stars of the group. So that's really cool to see. Hopefully, you know, we get goals from both sides and an exciting match, but it's still one that I'm expecting that we're going to lose. That's just how I feel about it.
Yeah. It is interesting that it's the last match in the group stage, because it might change the dynamic a bit depending on how the first two matches go. If perhaps you get a draw against Uruguay and beat Ghana, it could change the dynamic a bit. But I think for most people looking at Portugal, they're going to be many, many people's pick to win the group.
Yeah. But that being said, I want to win the group because I know, you know, our pairing for round of 16 is Group G. And if yes. You're second place, you most likely will have to face Brazil in the round of 16. You want to avoid that. I think the thing that, you know, this group will have is I think it's going to be very, very competitive. I certainly could see any of the four teams being the two to advance. And I think that also every single team in the group will be trying to play for first. So I think that's a good thing.
Absolutely. What do you actually think is going to happen?
If I'm being realistic, I think we'll probably finish third. That's where I'm like, my realistic feeling is that we will finish as the third best team in this group. Like dreaming high, I think, you know, you'd probably dreaming high, Korea would go into the Portugal match with 4 to 6 points, like 4 or 6 points, and have their sort of fate decided and know that they're in a really good position for the round of 16, and then maybe grab a draw and advance, right? But still, it's most likely, I would say, third place, maybe with just 3 points.
Yeah. I'm always interested to see how the Asian teams do at a World Cup, specifically because of what I described before, where qualifying tends to not be necessarily as competitive as you see in other confederations. So I think there's this element of surprise with a number of the Asian teams where you don't know what you're going to get. They've looked really strong in qualifying. Some of these teams get to the World Cup and don't perform at all. Others can really put forth a strong performance and surprise a lot of people. I think South Korea is really in that bucket where I do think they could surprise a lot of people. I certainly think they could get out of this group. Uruguay is playing better, but they did struggle for a while in qualifying. And Joe and I talked about it in some of our preview shows for World Cup qualifying. Uruguay did have a strong run at the end, but they didn't beat any team that's at the World Cup. They were playing really the bottom of the barrel CONMEBOL opponents. And you just look back at what happened in September with them. I mean, they lost to Iran. So I certainly think there's an upset possibility here. I would definitely not be surprised to see South Korea at least finish second. I think topping the group might be a little bit of a stretch, but getting into that second spot, I certainly think that's realistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree, because if you look at Uruguay, right, they're kind of in this weird time frame where they have a lot of older players, and kind of this is the last hurrah for that generation, right? Your Cavani's, your Suarez, right? But then they also have a lot of younger kids, and there's like this gap in the middle where there's like nobody has really made an impact in that squad from, I would say, you know, like between, I don't know, 23 and 29 years of age, right? There's kind of this gap. So you have a lot of inexperience on one end, a lot of experience on the other end. I just don't know how that's going to play into this group. So I think that's something to look for. And then also with Ghana, you know, I think there's an opportunity there too, because they're bringing in a lot of fresh faces. They're not all going to be really bled into the squad yet. And so I think South Korea actually has a really good chance finish second in this group. And that's pretty exciting. I did want to ask for a neutral, who can you guess, give us like one or two names of players that we should look out for? And then also, have you been impressed with how Paulo Bento has come in and taken over this side?
Okay, so for the neutral, I think most neutrals will know about someone like Son Heung-min. Mm-hmm. I think that's a name most neutrals will know, or a lot of people, if you're a Serie A fan, will be hearing about Kim Min-jae, our center back right now. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about like someone to keep an eye out for that the neutral might not know, I'm going to give you two names that I think are really possibly going to play a really important role in this squad. First of all, Freiburg's Jung Woo-young. He has the same name as one of the central defensive midfielders, but he's much younger. He's likely to play a role off the bench, or maybe start one or two of the matches as a sort of false nine secondary striker. His role is essentially he presses like crazy. He's everywhere, and he's there to disrupt the other team's build-up play, just cause interceptions, and then when that happens, he just makes a beeline for the goal and makes a run. He's, you know, really useful in that role. I've seen him do it at Freiburg. I've seen him do it for the national team. I think he's going to be, you know, a guy to look out for. Another person to look out for is Hwang In-beom. He plays for Olympiacos in Greece, not the biggest league. He's kind of been around the Korean national team picture for a long time, ever since the 2018 Asian Games. He's kind of our creative hub. He's the guy that is everywhere in midfield, just sort of getting those passes and then getting his head up to try to create something, progress the ball forward. And then also he's on the smaller side, but for a guy like that's not the biggest guy, he's also very active defensively. He really tries to get into the tackle. So I think those are two guys that like the neutral might not know about, but I would suggest you probably take a look at. Okay. And then for your second question, man, so with my buddies in the tavern, like we have these debates all the time. Mm-hmm. Do we like Paulo Bento? Do we not like him? I think there's pros and cons. There's pros and cons all the time, right? So, but I think like what you were just talking about with Ghana and with Uruguay, this idea of, you know, Ghana recruiting new players and having to like just get new players in really late in the game, and also Uruguay having sort of like a generation gap where their older veterans don't really have those like mid-20s guys to help them out. That's actually not the case for Korea. I think that the biggest thing that Paulo Bento has done across this 4 years is he has found a pool of like 20 to 30 players that he likes and that he trusts and that he uses very frequently. So I think whether this team plays amazing football or very like average football, they all know each other really well. And I think that's something that, you know, he's done really well. In terms of like my cons to Paolo Bento, I think just tactically, he might be a little bit rigid. And I think we also just kind of like, as a group, we're like, Paolo, can you make some substitutions a little bit earlier? Can you react to the game more with your substitutions? Those are the things. But creating a team, he has definitely done that over 4 years. And I think that will, you know, have some benefits in Qatar.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we've talked at various points about a lot of these teams, and that's always one of the things that keeps coming up for us is you have this contrast between some of these teams where a bunch of players are coming in that are playing all over the world that see each other once every couple months, once they get together for whether it be a friendly or whatever. And then another bucket of teams where the players really are all familiar with each other, whether it be playing in the same league, whether it just be, to your point, having a consistent pool of players over a number of years. I think we've felt that that group of teams will have some advantage as we look at the World Cup and that familiarity, especially because this is just a very interesting one. Players are coming into camp at different points in time. It's not your typical June World Cup. You have it really in the middle of the season for a lot of the players. And I definitely feel like that familiarity will come in handy in Qatar.
Yeah. And I mean, like for a player, like just to sort of like talk about familiarity and how it will help some players. For example, like one player that I think it's really going to help, and I already saw it help him in September, was Hwang Hee-chan. He was not playing very often at Wolves, but he came in and played great because he's been playing in that system for 4 years. He knows what the manager wants from him. He knows his teammates and, you know, where they're going to be and what sort of advantages he's going to have on the pitch. And I think that that's something like, you know, it's just, it's really good to have a system where a player can come in, whether they're playing 90 minutes every week or whether they're just coming off the bench for 10 to 15 minutes and still be able to succeed because they know the system over 4 years.
Yeah. And you, especially when players are switching clubs, perhaps not getting as much playing time, to have that familiarity and come back and be like, okay, I've played with these players. I know the manager. I know what's expected of me. That can also really bring out the best in a lot of players. And I think you'll see that at the World Cup for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, want to hear outside of the group, who is your pick to win the World Cup this year?
I've thought about this a lot, and like I did an episode maybe like right after the draw came out, and I picked Brazil, and I still pick them. I just think that like in terms of the attacking talent that they have at their disposal right now, and then also that mix that they have where they also have a solid defensive spine, I think that, you know, it just feels like everything's kind of coming together for them. Like they've been on an amazing run with Tite. You know, they're just, I feel like they're one of the favorites. It's been too long since they've won, you know. Yeah. They haven't won the World Cup since 2002, the World Cup that was in Korea and Japan. It just feels like it's been too long for them to win one. It feels like the time for them. And then I think staying in South America, I also think that, you know, Leo Messi in his last World Cup also has a very good chance to win it, just because of that sort of like factor of like all of his teammates knowing, like, you know, Lionel Messi is a legend of our Argentinian national team. This may be the last time we get to play with him at an event like this. Let's do everything for him. Yeah. So I think those feel like my two favorites. And I feel weird not picking a team from Europe, but it just feels like those two South American sides are the ones to watch.
We've had that conversation as well. And you're not alone feeling that way.
Yes.
And there does not seem to be a ton of confidence in the European teams at this World Cup. Joe, who did you pick when we last discussed?
Yeah, it was Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. Yep.
I'll keep asking you with every show.
No, you're fine.
I picked the Netherlands the last time out, but Brazil's definitely up there for me too.
It's weird. Like, I mean, the only European team that I have a lot of confidence in, or just like I feel that's is confident going to this World Cup, maybe Spain. It doesn't feel like England has their sort of
act together.
They don't really know what they're doing right now. Not sure about France. Like, you know, there's a lot of drama going on with like Pogba and Mbappe. That's going to have some sort of effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure about that. Netherlands, like, still, you know, they're still working on rebuilding after their sort of rough period. And then Belgium, like, yeah, Belgium is ridiculously strong, but also like they kind of do this every single time.
Yeah.
It feels like for the past 8 years, they've been in this position where they're ridiculously strong. They have a lot of really top players, and you just feel like they're going to get there. Like, they'll probably be around the semifinals, and that's going to be that. But yeah.
Yeah.
Spain, that's it for me.
That's
the only European team I like. I don't even want to talk about Portugal. I can't.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, that's interesting. So you basically mentioned all of them except for the two that we kind of are thinking, Denmark and Croatia. We think maybe they have a really good chance.
Oh my gosh.
Because Croatia, you know,
you guys are absolutely right.
you know, they're finding really good form right now, and Denmark is just also a very, very good team. So
yeah.
So it's just kind of funny.
Good mix across the board, I think.
It goes
to show. I don't know that anybody is super confident in any group of teams. I think Brazil and Argentina people are going to be high on, but
yeah,
it feels like it's wide open where a lot of different teams could win it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Michael. Well, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. Again, please go and follow Michael on Twitter. The Tavern is your place to find anything for Korean football. So please go give them a follow. And Michael, we really appreciate you joining us tonight.
Thanks so much for the time, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right.